Hello and welcome to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. 4 o'clock hour. You're on the sprint here towards the end. If you're a 9 to 5, you got 53 minutes, 25 seconds until the end of the day. Appreciate so much you spending that time with us here as we give attention to all things economic and financial here on Dollars and Cents. Sometimes we're looking at things on a macro level, right? Global, looking at things that are happening, countries, economic systems around us, understanding how they influence and impact our lives here. But we also seek to break things down to an individual level, or let's call it more situational sort of things that may be part of your experience or maybe part of family members' experience, colleagues' experiences. But in doing so, you also recall, as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, that nothing that we're talking about here is intended as a specific recommendation for you. I know, you hear me say that all the time, but it's very, very important that you keep that in mind. We're going to be talking on companies here. It's earnings season. I feel like it's always earnings season, right? I get excited about these kinds of things. But we're going to talk about companies here, some in a positive light, some in a not-so-positive light, maybe even ones that you really like. We may not be talking about all that positively today. I'll let you know that. But in doing so, again, it's not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold. Everybody's situation is unique. We strongly, strongly recommend that you reach out to your tax advisor, to your financial advisor, if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to hear from you. Love to chat about your particular financial situation to see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com. Northmainfinancial.com. You give us a note there. Let us know an email address, a phone number. Let us know the most preferred and desirable ways for us to contact you again at northmainfinancial.com. All right, let's get into it. What's hot? We love this segment. At least I'll say I love this segment, right? Because we're talking about the kinds of things that are hitting your headlines, those kinds of things which may be a part of your experience and looking at things news source-wise online. If you're like me and if you're watching us on the socials right now or on the WSIC app, I got newspaper in front of me. I got newsprint on my fingertips. So long as we're printing this stuff, I'm going to keep on reading it. So loving this kind of stuff always when we're looking at those things which are most pertinent, perhaps important in your particular financial space. I'm going to start with a big one here. It's a macro. Some will call it academic in terms of how it comes across, but I promise you we're all impacted by it in some way. GDP figures came out for first quarter here in the U.S., and that was just this morning. As of the time of this live broadcast, or as of the time of this podcast recording, if you happen to be listening to the recording here, just came out this morning. Lighter than expected. Very interesting. Definitely not what the market overall was expecting in terms of GDP growth. So when I'm saying GDP growth and you're listening to me saying, okay, what in the world is GDP growth? I get it. I mean, you're saying, oh, well, how does this impact me? What's its relevance to me? GDP, gross domestic product, basically what we produce as a country. Meaning what we produce value-wise, you go to work each day, the companies for whom you work, what we actually produce, the value that we produce as a country. Now, we are generally expected in this kind of environment to I'll give you a number, all right? Let's say we're generally expected to be on a 3% per year roughly growth rate. Well, there was an expectation, at least on an annualized basis, that for Q1 of this year, so the first quarter, January to March 31st, January 1st to March 31st of this year, that we would be at right around 2.4-ish% on an annualized basis, so a little bit below, which we knew that because of where interest rates are right now. You've heard me talk a lot about that here on Dollars and Cents. But in looking at that, came in light, 1.6% on an annualized basis in terms of the growth as measured by GDP production here in the first quarter of this year. Now, you also know, as a previous listener of Dollars and Cents, we don't get too wired up on single data points. Can't do it. Because sometimes we have outliers. Sometimes there are one-offs, one-timers that get baked into that algorithm that would, let's say, give us inappropriate kind of picture if we extrapolated too far on them. And so we really can't do that. But it's noteworthy enough to be able to share with you here on What's Hot. Certainly it's echoing through the news headlines right now in my end of the universe, certainly with regards to market sentiment, where things are right now. Equities selling off, yield spiking, especially on the front end of the yield curve, 2-year, 3-year, 4-year treasuries right now. Definitely a spike on the yields there, which means sell off, a lot of movement to cash. Very interesting. A lot of movement to cash here today as this kind of data point came through, which was really a surprise, at least according to those kinds of folks who track this closely and make some kind of prognostication about what's going to happen with these kinds of things, which I think is a little bit crazy because things move so fast when it comes to, you know, particular data points. No, we don't move fast overall as an economy, but particular data points can fluctuate so rapidly, especially due to one-off events. When we're looking at the kinds of things that happened in the first quarter of this year, it can be easy to extrapolate way too much, right? Because we have seasonal employment coming offline in the first quarter. Generally speaking, of every calendar year, first quarter of every calendar year, you get the seasonal Christmas kind of, let's call it end of year retail sort of space, which kind of unwinds a little bit. You get the splurges that were a part of the, again, of the fourth calendar quarter beginning to unwind a little bit. Everybody's got credit card bills. People are back to school. So things get a little quiet. Right. So that's a very, let's call it natural or semi-expected kind of happening there. So that's why I'm not getting too wired up on these data points relative to GDP, relative slowdown in the first quarter here. What will be really interesting, and you know this as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, what will be really interesting are the subsequent quarters, because the intention, let's come back to the Federal Reserve here now for just a moment, the intention by the Federal Reserve in raising rates by their own very explicit kinds of words that are part of their reports there is to be able to slow down things. I mean, and that's, you're looking at, well, why would they want to slow things down? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't disagree with you unless you understand inflation. And inflation essentially means, right, that we got too many dollars chasing too few goods. That's really what it is. And so you start to get a burn down in the value of the dollar or a value of the currency. So as counterintuitive as it might be, running too hot is not good and running too cold is not good. We're going to talk about children's stories here now. You want to just have the porridge be just right. And it really is true. It really is true. And that's practically impossible to do. It literally is practically impossible to do, but we're always trying to get there. And so that with these data points here relative to, let's call it a cooling, or at least the initial data point is a cooling beyond what was desired here in the first quarter of this year. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen in the second quarter of this year. So we're going to watch that very closely. If we line up additional data points next to that with subsequent data that looks like it's going to continue to remain in that space, I think we'll have a greater indication about where the economy is overall, because we need for the economy to be moving forward. And I know that the explicit, let's call it semi-mandate that the Federal Reserve has put out there is to cool things down, but they definitely don't want it to stop. Remember, I'm coming back to the porridge. They just want it to be just right in terms of how it's put together. So be watching that. Be watching for those kinds of things. Be watching other corollary kinds of data points. And I'm looking at things like unemployment. I'm looking at things like producer price index, which happens to be what producers pay in terms of producing, let's call it wholesale level goods, before we, the consumers, actually buy them. But what are their prices looking at? I mean, but you look at commodity prices, they're up right now. We're going to talk about this in the next segment. We're talking about a very large merger possibility that's sitting out there, specifically in the copper industry. You may say, what does copper have to do with me? I promise you, if you have an iPhone, you are concerned about the price of copper right now, because there's a lot of copper on those semiconductor chips inside of that iPhone or the Android phone that you have. It's a big, big deal. We're going to be talking about that here in the next segment. Well, folks, I appreciate so much you hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. We're going to hear from our sponsors. Hang with us here on WSIC.
There's more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Second quarter of today's show, football reference. Producer Bill, it is a fact that we are now 1 week closer to the start of football season than we were last week. I mean, I do like to say that. No, I'm not going to tell you how many days are left. I'm not going to tell you the count. That's a little bit cliched, right? I'm just going to tell you that we're actually one week closer. If you're a baseball fan, I get it. I love baseball too, but I especially love football. So it's good that we're 1 week closer to football season, but we're also in the middle of baseball season. So if you're a baseball fan, we appreciate that as well. But thank you so much for hanging with us here. Second quarter of Dollars and Cents. You may be thinking about, what does that have to do with anything financial? You take a look at some of these. You take a look at what the cost of a ticket is My gosh, I was at a Major League Baseball game. I'm not going to indict the team by mentioning which team that it was, but I was at a Major League Baseball game here within the last couple of weeks. Holy smokes. I mean, it's a mortgage payment. My gosh, doing a ticket, maybe getting something to drink and something to eat and something somewhere to park. Holy mackerel, it is something, but there are tons of people doing it. It is amazing, speaking to the power of the consumer, speaking to those folks who are literally building our economy. There were a lot of folks building their economy, I'll tell you that, at this baseball game where I was here. Appreciate you hanging with us here. So we were hanging just before we went to break there, talking about a significant merger announcement. I'm going to call it an announcement, long way from completion, long way from approval, final kind of space with regards to the copper markets. And I say copper markets because that's really where these two play. If we're talking about BHP and we're talking about Anglo American, literally just announced this morning, actually this came from BHP's end of things, talking about how BHP was going to acquire Anglo American. Now, you may say, I never heard of these companies prior. These are huge international mining, let me call them multifaceted mining companies, and they're especially strong in the copper markets or copper mining. And so we're talking about an acquisition level. We're getting close to $40 billion. So we're probably, let's say $38 to $40 billion. In terms of the acquisition size possibility here, this is huge. These are big, big companies making big acquisitions, attempting to position themselves, I would say, certainly from BHP's standpoint, to be the dominant player in the copper market. You'd be like, well, what does copper have to do with me? Well, first of all, if you take a look in the crawl space here in the South, if you take a look at the crawl space, chances are you got copper lines and copper wires underneath there carrying your water, carrying your electricity into your house there, but also with regards to especially, and this is where the demand is very, very high right now, with regards to semiconductors, computer chips, and the copper that goes into the manufacture of those end of things, at least in terms of what has been espoused to this point from a public standpoint, that appears to be the play. That appears to be the reason for this kind of, let's call it proposed merger, at this point, between BHP and Anglo American. Now, I keep saying proposed because nothing's real until it's real. These things don't just get announced and closed automatically. When you're talking about something on the order of $40 billion merger, there is a lot that has to go into it, not the least of which has to do with anti-competitive, antitrust issues because of the ways in which, with this kind of combination in terms of the dominance in the copper markets or copper mining, copper manufacturing kinds of spaces, you're looking at north of 50% with one company. So if that comes to fruition, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, good or bad, that's not for me to decide, but I do know that there's going to be scrutiny, specifically from the SEC, because these are two publicly traded companies, whether this is going to be allowed to fly. And so we're going to watch that. That's going to play into pricing. That's going to play into supply. And from their standpoint, they're saying, well, from BHP's standpoint and also Anglo-American standpoint, saying that there will be greater efficiencies, you'll be able to offer lower prices, right? It's the normal mantra. And I'm not saying, again, that I'm in favor, not in favor, not saying this is a recommendation to buy Anglo-American. I wouldn't do that now anyhow because it's up about 17% at about the time we went to on air here. So probably don't want to buy into the strength of that. BHP was down about 4% before I went on air here. That you probably don't want to do that today. You rarely want to do that on the day of an announcement of this kind, but it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be interesting to see also, because this often happens that I'm looking at you, Kroger and Albertsons right now, that's in the supermarket end of things, talking about merger and acquisition, that often what happens is the SEC comes back and says, or other entities come back and say, well, you need to divest some of these assets in order for us to approve or, frankly, not file suit to be able to challenge this merger. And so I wouldn't be surprised if BHP and Anglo American are going to be required to sell some assets, to liquidate certain parts of their business in order to be not too highly concentrated in the copper markets. So we're going to watch that. It's a big deal. Just in terms of the dollar amounts, again, you get up closer to $40 billion in a single deal. That's a big deal, as far as my end of the universe is concerned. All right, we've talked enough here on the Federal Reserve. We talked about copper mining. So what would be an easy corollary to that? Yeah, you're right. Let's talk burritos. I love burritos. I do. I mean, I know not everybody loves Mexican food or Tex-Mex food, and I appreciate that. I'm trying to think quickly here if there's a food I've had which I don't like. No. No, I can't come to one. Producer Bill, I think we had a
brief, you are not alone.
So this is not a journey I'm traveling by myself.
Not at all, my friend. Not at all.
I mean a good burrito. I'm trying to think of a time when I've said, no, you know what, that doesn't sound good to me.
Yes.
And I can't find that time.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So along those lines, Chipotle, ticker symbol CMG, Charlie Mary Green, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold, came out with quarterly earnings here yesterday. And yes, I am looking at Chipotle because I do love their guacamole.
Mm.
I mean, and they have those, and I'm whatever is the opposite. And I know that we probably will catch some calls and some feedback on this. That's all right. I'm whatever is the opposite of one who embraces healthy food. So I'm not that guy. I mean, frankly, if you give me some fried chicken wings about three times a day, I may die happy.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm right there with you.
So I want to say that first. However, there is the bowl option.
Sure.
With Chipotle. You know where I'm going with this. I mean, I think it's a brown rice.
Yes.
Which I think is even healthier.
Yep.
There's a brown rice bowl option where you get the chicken on there. You get the guac on there. You get the spicy sauce. I mean, I'm telling you, I feel like I'm practically Tracy Austin. And Tracy, I'll know exactly how old you are if you know who Tracy Austin is. Doing aerobics on VCR tapes.
Okay.
Really. I practically feel like I'm on a health kick. I mean, it is really good.
Yes.
Really good.
I had some earlier this week.
See?
Yeah.
So you can profess to it firsthand.
100%.
Mm. So they came out with good earnings here. And I know I can tell producer Bill and certainly I were ones who contributed.
Yeah, a pretty substantial role. Probably bigger than I'd like to admit. Yeah.
So maybe the estimates were at a certain level and you and I just kind of pushed them
correct,
up. That's what brought them out so well.
Right.
Here on their
I'm just one data point.
You're one data point. You're a strong data point. They're thankful. They're thankful, whether they say it or not. But Chipotle came out with some strong earnings here. And Chipotle's kind of gone through a boom-bust kind of cycle. They came out very strong, lots of expansion, lots of spending, lots of, you know, very popular in the markets, definitely cooled off, probably, you know, too much too fast in terms of how they were expanding and the kinds of places they were going. And the stock price got hammered. But they have now begun to kind of rebuild and build back. And it's been good to see because you always want to see those kinds of things, especially with companies who are interested in long-term sustainability. And certainly it seems like they're trying to do that there. All right, let's keep going. We're in earnings season, as I mentioned. This is a big one. It would be hard to, let's say, overestimate. I mean, there's no single company, I don't think, that necessarily drives the entire economy. But there are a handful of companies that, boy, just seem to be an indication about where things are overall. And Apple would certainly be up there. Amazon would certainly be up there in terms of just understanding where, you know, folks are spending their money and the kinds of spaces to which our economy is moving. This next one, you'd be hard pressed again to put ones that would be largely above this next one. And boy, the market really didn't like what they had to say yesterday. And that's Meta. Meta is the old Facebook, and I have to say it that way because I still think of them as Facebook. But the company name has changed to Meta, and came out with earnings at the close of yesterday's business, as of the time of this live broadcast, or as of the time of this recording. And I would say, by any reasonable measure, and I tend to tear through these things, and they are, I'll admit to it, they're ridiculously boring. You're looking through just reams of data, most of which just make you go cross-eyed. But as I was tearing through and looking, trying to find the most pertinent kinds of things, I would say from a quarterly earnings standpoint that Meta did pretty well. Certainly, relative to expectations, I would say they met expectations. But that's the crazy world in which we are, especially with these large technology companies right now, that they met expectations. And let's say their forward-looking guidance wasn't perfect and beautiful all the time. And I think that's probably the best way to describe it, because their forward expectations weren't unnaturally dark. I don't think so. They had the normal caveats about we don't know what's yet ahead and we're always going to adjust as things happen that we don't anticipate. You know, all the things that good publicly traded companies are going to say to be able to cover off on what it is that they're doing. So I didn't see anything out of the ordinary. boy almighty, did the market not like it. Boy, the overnight markets, the futures specifically, and even some trading, definitely not good. It was down 19-20% pre-market during the day. Now, at least before I came online here, 12-15% down in a single day for a company as large as Meta or Facebook. One of the worst days ever, single days ever in terms of performance for the stock. Very interesting to see. Very interesting to see that kind of negative sentiment. Now, we've talked about this, where the large technology companies have really powered the market from a positive standpoint. But what can often happen with those kinds of companies is that when things are not glistening and perfect, is that they can take the hammer on the head pretty quickly. And I think that's what we're seeing with Meta right now. Meta, I wouldn't say, is in a negative place from an overall company standpoint. Again, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold, not anything like that. But looking at it saying, okay, maybe this is a little bit of an exaggeration. We'll see. Well, friends, thank you so much for hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Hang with us here as we hear from our sponsors here on WSIC.
We'll have more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie following these brief messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Making your money make sense. Dollars and Cents with CFP Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us into the second half of today's show. 25 minutes, 40 seconds left until you get to the end of that tape. If you're a 9-to-5er, I appreciate so much you hanging with us here as we give attention to all things financial and economic, understanding those things that are happening around us. Just before we went to break there, we were talking about Meta, the old Facebook, right? If that's how you happen to be remembering it, I certainly do, because I remember when, I know, I'm dating myself here. I remember when Facebook went public. It wasn't all that long ago. I mean, really, it wasn't all that, heck, I remember, I could tell you what I was doing whenever Mark Zuckerberg was born. Jeez almighty. All right, enough of that. My goodness. Anyhow, I came out with quarterly earnings here. And I would say by all objective measures, they were fairly reasonable in terms of the numbers that came through. But boy, the market really didn't like it. Sold off about 12-15% here just before I came on air. But you have to take that in context. And I didn't say this before we went to break there, but I need to say this to provide some context to it. The shares of Meta, if you happen to be tracking them, own them, those kinds of things. Again, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Meta. But the shares of Meta were up over 40% year-to-date before this print or before these earnings came out. So when we're talking about pulling back 12-15%, remember, if you're watching, if you're tracking the stock, just since January 1st, that still means net. They're positive 15-18% this year. I mean, they've already had a tremendous amount of growth already just this year. If we're looking at reasonable market expectations in terms of annualized growth rates, I mean, they had several years worth of growth there just in a couple of months. So even though they've pulled back quite a bit, let's take it in context that over the last several months, they have had a huge amount of growth in that stock price. So again, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold on that end of things, but just in context of what the overall performance has been. So very interesting to keep that in mind. And literally, just while we were on break there at the halfway point in this show, I saw that Google came out with their announcements. I told you this was earnings season. I was just scrolling through the data feeds here in terms of what's happening in the markets and certainly post-market here in the U.S. as things had closed at 4 o'clock Eastern in terms of the publicly traded before the after-hour stuff. Google came out, very interesting, announced a dividend, which I thought was very first time ever. Never have paid a dividend before. It kind of reminds me of when Apple stock said that they were going to start paying a dividend. Google came out and said they were for the first time ever going to pay a cash dividend to shareholders. I don't have the dates in terms of the record dates or when they're going to be paid or anything like that, but they're going to be paying a dividend and also doing another stock buyback. Looks like on the order of $70 billion. $70 billion. Now, big companies, we're talking upwards of trillion-dollar companies here, but still huge in terms of stock buyback, cash payout. I mean, I'm going to repeat something that somebody, a good stock investor, told me many, many years ago. Can't fake cash. And you can't. You can't fake cash when they're paying you a dividend. They have to have it in order to pay it out to you. And there's something to that. It doesn't mean that all dividend companies are good or anything like that. But it is true. that that you can't fake cash. So very interesting that a company like Google is going to start paying a dividend, and but not as unique, but certainly that they're going to have a big stock buyback as well. Must be feeling pretty confident pretty much across the board. And certainly the stock is reflecting that. Just before we came back online here to the show, they were up about 12, 13, 14% here in after hours trading. So very interesting. Again, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold. Google, G-O-O-G or G-O-O-G-L, depending upon the share class that you own or may not own, but certainly the ones that are traded there. Again, not a recommendation on any front there, but still very interesting to see that kind of thing. So, all right, let's keep going. As far as what's hot here, I mean, big items that are out there. I got to share this with you. It's not law yet. And I'm not sure that it will be law, but it's definitely out there in terms of the employer-employee relationship. Big stuff. The FTC, Federal Trade Commission, came out with a, I'm going to call it a declaration at this point. It's going to get contested. It already is being contested even within the last 24 hours of it being announced. That the FTC came out and said that they're going to be moving to ban non-compete clauses. Now, if you're an employee and you have been a part of an organization where you had to sign or did sign a non-compete clause, essentially what that means is, if you're not familiar with them, that you agree within a certain time frame, sometimes in and also with regards to a certain physical distance, to not be employed or not start a business that is very similar to, and those are subjective definitions, that is very similar to the business or the company with which you're working currently. Really what that's intended to do is to give the employers some protection from employees who may want to start another a competing business or work for a competitor in the relative near proximity to where they are physically or certainly with regards to the style of business that the way with which they're engaged. So the FTC has come out and said that that they're going to be moving to ban non-compete clauses. Now, I'm saying that, A, to inform you that that's the case, but B, also to say this is going to be very contentious. I would anticipate a significant amount of pullback or a pushback, excuse me, pushback from the employer community, business community, in terms of saying that this is just, you know, in terms of a blanket kind of space, this is just not practical. Now, There's going to be discussion both ways. There are going to be very salient and important points in both directions. No way to know where it's going to land at this point. If I had to guess, I would anticipate there's going to be some kind of middle ground on which there is some settlement of this particular move by the FTC in order to ban non-compete clauses. Very interesting, though. It's a phenomenon of the last, I would say, 30 years that the non-compete clauses have really come into play with regards to employee contracts for any number of reasons. Again, you can debate them whether they're positive or negative, probably some of each if we're really calling it what it is, but really have been a relatively recent phenomenon. And so to come out and blanket say they're going to eliminate them altogether, probably out over their skis a little bit, or at least in terms of what they can anticipate will be the final settlement or the final resolution of that kind of space. Maybe that was the idea behind it, that you know, you ask for too much and you're willing to settle for just a little bit less kind of thing. So it might be that kind of space. We're going to watch that, though. Certainly very important and pertinent with regards to employee-employer relationships. And certainly, again, if that has been part of your experience, something that you want to keep in mind. All right, we're going to keep going here on What's Up. We've got tons of stuff. Gosh, I could go all night long. Don't worry, I won't. I know that would probably put you to tears here, but let's keep going on the what's hot end of things. These are big names. Certainly the one I'm going to say next, not a publicly traded company here in the U.S., but I would be surprised if you are not familiar with them. I'm familiar with them, and I don't use them at all in terms of this app or anything along these lines, and it's TikTok. I mean, TikTok, when I was growing up, had to do with what a clock did on a wall. That's not in anywhere near what TikTok is anymore. I'm sure you know. When I say TikTok, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. You may even use it. Actually, if our publicly available data is any indication, the chances are, if you're listening to me right now, there's about a 3 out of 4 chance you do use TikTok because of the several hundred million people. Let me say it this way. That would be a little bit presumptive. Several hundred million accounts that we have here in the U.S., just in the U.S., that use TikTok. So we're talking about a huge kind of utilization aspect here in the U.S. with regards to the TikTok app. And if you happen to be one of the seven people in this country, it doesn't. No, I'm just kidding. There aren't too many more than seven who don't know what TikTok is. It is an app. Right, it's a social media app. You take videos, you share videos with your friends or other people, and you know, people like them and are influenced by them, and all of those. I know I sound like an old curmudgeon. I'm barely literate in these kinds of things. But anyhow, the reason why it's relevant, yes, because of its pervasive use here in the country, but also because Congress came out and has literally set a law now in place, which puts the owner of TikTok, which happens to be a group called ByteDance. Nope, I don't have any idea why it's called that. And it's not bite like biting on a carrot. It is bite like a computer information nugget, like BYTE, not BITE. So BYTE Dance, ByteDance is the group that owns it, Chinese company that owns it. And there is some concern by Congress, and this is the reason for the movement. There is some concern by Congress about national security issues with regards to TikTok. I am nowhere near erudite enough to be able to speak into the reasons why. That may or may not be the case, but there is concern about it. And that is the reason for this movement, which essentially gives ByteDance the, let's say, a time frame, maybe even a, oh, this is going to be horribly cliched, a ticking clock to be able to sell the company or to divest of the company in such a way so that there is less ownership by ByteDance and by implication than the Chinese government with regards to the entity overall and their ability to collect data. Now, is that going to happen? Is it not going to happen? We've got about a year to figure that out. ByteDance has about a year to figure that out. There's going to be a lot of pushback from several different significant lobbying entities before we actually figure out whether that's going to be the case or not. But very interesting to see, especially because of how much usage there is here in the U.S. So who's going to be on the pushback end of things? What are the different groups that are going to raise objection to that kind of thing? What's it going to look like on the other side? Are they actually going to divest? Are they actually going to change the kind of experience that TikTok is? It's going to impact a lot of people. All right, friends, thank you so much for hanging with us here. We're going to hear from our sponsors. Hang with us on WSIC.
Keep it right here. Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie will return shortly on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. We're back now with more of Dollars and Cents with your host, certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much. Hanging with us into the fourth quarter football reference. Appreciate you being here. You got 11 minutes, 55 seconds until the end. A big deep breath, and you're practically at the end of the day. Don't just take a deep breath. Do what you need to do. Sprint through the tape. Make sure you're getting things done that you need to get done there. But I appreciate you hanging with us here for the final minutes here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Now, I made a football reference there. Producer Bill, you're going to have to help me out on the timing on this thing, if you know. And I'm putting it on the spot a little bit here. But the NFL draft.
Correct.
Coming up soon. I want to say, let's say within a week.
It might be this week.
Is it? May even be this week.
Tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow?
Or next week.
That's probably why I'm seeing it all the sports stations that are out there. So, for all you NFL fans, or I should say also for all you college football fans who got your favorites, who are looking for them to be drafted here. You know, and producer Bill and I haven't figured this out yet. I need to figure out a way as I'm watching these, and I usually do late at night, which is probably means they're on a repeat of some kind. I hope they're not live the time that I'm watching them. But I got to figure out how to get compensated to be on these shows where they just provide their opinions about who's going to be drafted and when.
Correct.
I'm doing it wrong.
Great gig.
I'm doing it wrong. I mean, I'm doing what I'm doing, you're doing what you're doing, and working for a living, I got to figure out how somebody's going to pay me for saying, you know what, I think Drake May, yeah, he might go to the Patriots.
Here's a guy,
I mean, you know, I like this guy. I'm watching some film. You know, he's a good player.
Yeah.
Well, he's a Tar Heel. Exactly. You know, he's got good football sense. And, you know, the Tar Heels, good program.
His dad was a coach. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, his brothers were good players. I'm looking at you, Drake May, because you're a Carolina boy. That's why. And we were hoping for all good things in the draft for you as it's coming up.
It actually
up
starts tonight.
Is it tonight?
It is tonight.
Oh, gosh. See, that's why. That's why I was seeing it on there. Okay.
Not for the Panthers. It's but, okay. Yeah.
It's early.
Yeah, it's early. Thank you. It's early. It's early. I needed a reminder.
It's this is not funny. It's really early for the Panthers because we don't have a first-round draft pick, to my knowledge.
Correct.
At least as of this moment. So we don't have to be concerned with.
And we didn't want these tough decisions.
We didn't.
No.
Right. That's why we did.
You guys overthink it. We'll take the. We'll find the gym.
Bless. All right. You Carolina Panthers fans, you better not give up on it now. Are you kidding me? If you come this far.
It says right there in the corner of the screen. Thursday.
It's
Thursday.
It's Thursday. If you've come this far, you will not get off the bandwagon at this point. You will remain a fan. All right. Thanks so much. Hanging with us here as producer Bill and I are talking about football. Appreciate you hanging with us on Dollars and Cents. All right. Let's do fourth quarter kinds of things. Kind of an interesting data point here. And this, you know, this is the kind of thing I know you're going to listen to this and you're like, boy, you really don't have an exciting life. And I'd agree with you on several different fronts here. But with regards to data, it's important. And it's important not in and of itself, but obviously in the context of other data points, right? That's how we strengthen data. That's how we look at data points. That's how we look at statistics. That's how we look at performance figures, and we have confidence in what they are in the context of other data points or statistics or performance around it. And so, what I'm going to say next here, again, it's a single data point, but it is in the context certainly of what's happened here over the last four plus decades of looking at it. Last year, 2023, children born here in the U.S. And you say, okay, what does this have to do with that? It's going to have a lot more than you think to it. Children born here in the U.S., the lowest number since 1979. I think that's kind of interesting. It's because certainly that's been a trajectory. It's not, we didn't have an abnormal 2023 where it was all of a sudden a very large discrepancy or a very large pullback from previous years. I think 1.8% 2.2% differential from the previous year. So not a huge differential year over year. 3.59 million births here in the U.S. in 2023, the fewest births since 1979. Now, you may be looking at that and say, okay, in and of itself, okay, but remember, we have a significantly higher population here in the U.S. now than we did in 1979, specifically females, right, for the obvious reasons, when we're looking at the number of births. So we have significantly higher number of females, and then we have the smallest number of births since 1979. And this is a trajectory. This is not, I highlighted it as a single data point because it is, in this particular context, a single data point. But this is not an anomaly. This is not something that has just happened here over the course of the last year, but something that has been continuously reducing here over the last couple of decades. So what does that mean? Well, there are several implications here. Actually, you can look at them, not just financial, obviously, sociological kinds of implications from them. We're not going to get into all of those or even all of the financial implications from it. But I'm especially thinking about things like workforce. I'm especially looking at things like sustainability of our social welfare programs, whether we're talking about Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. And you're looking at that and saying, well, wouldn't that actually be a better thing? It might be. But also remember that even though there are fewer births, also remember we are living substantially longer. Certainly from an algorithmic standpoint, actuarial standpoint, we are living substantially longer than we were 4 or 5 decades ago, meaning our average age at passing or average age at death has gone up notably here over the last 4 or 5 decades. I mean, one of the things in my end of the world is when you're looking at life insurance premiums, what does that have to do with it? Well, think about it. Life insurance companies, generally speaking, they are offering life insurance with a reduced expectation that you're actually going to use it. And if they do believe you're going to use it, it's substantially more expensive. It's just math. I mean, it's not saying life insurance companies are bad or anything like that. It's just math. But the cost of life insurance have come down dramatically here over the, especially on the term insurance side of things, have been reduced or have come down dramatically over the last 4 or 5 decades. And the reason for that is because we're living longer. So there's less of a chance, especially with a fixed term kind of life insurance sort of things. This is really the what to know for today, that with fixed term kind of life insurance sort of things, where there's less of a chance that it's going to be used, then it's going to be cheaper. Right? Just think about it from the life insurance company perspective. When we're thinking about it, how it goes together, really what they're going to do, they're going to increase the expense or increase the premium if they think there's, according to their math, according to their actuarial experience, if there's going to be a higher probability that it's going to be used. If there's less of a probability it's going to be used, then it becomes less expensive to own, because there's less probability that it's going to be used. So remember, because you're looking at life insurance just for your individual space, right? You're looking at it relative to your age. You're looking at it relative to the amount of coverage that you have. You're looking for the number of years that you may have it if it's a term policy. You're looking at it in terms of the overall cost if you're looking at universal or whole life insurance. So you're looking at it on an individual level. Remember, the life insurance company is looking at it relative to all of the insureds in their database, literally all of the insureds for which they are responsible and where they have contracts in place. So they're going to be basing the next policy's premium based upon what is happening inside of their current insured base. And that's very important to keep in mind. And that's why the prices move, meaning they change over time, because that experience is going to change either in a positive or a negative direction relative to the cost of insurance. And that's going to be priced in the next policy that happens. Because with most policies, let me say on the term insurance side of things, not always true, but certainly on the term insurance side of things, for the most part, many times, if you get a 10-year term, a 20-year term, a 30-year term, many policies, not all of them, because there are certainly those that adjust each year, but there are many policies which fix their cost over the course of that term. So that if you get a 10-year term policy, many times, not always, but many times, that cost is fixed over the course of that term, meaning that you continue to pay that premium over the course of that term. It's going to continue to be enforced for you if you should, in fact, need it. Now, it's also true that there are policies that adjust over time. They're like, there are ones sometimes used with the acronym ART, or annual renewable terms, but they adjust in terms of the premium which is required to keep them in place each year. And if you have a universal or a whole life policy, whole different animal altogether, you may be required to pay more into those policies over time if the investment performance and the interest rate performance combined with the amount that you're paying in premium doesn't keep up enough in order to be able to cover the cost of insurance. Now, I know that's a lot. I'm downloading a lot to you right now. But I'm saying that, A, in the context of the first data point that I was talking about, we have fewer folks being born in this country. But then with regards to the actuarial experience, those things, what to know when it comes to life insurance. Life insurance isn't for everybody. I know. I'll probably hear some calls on that. That's okay. Life insurance is not for everybody. Life insurance is for a specific need, just like any insurance is. Right? You're insuring against a particular risk, and you can choose to insure against that risk, or you can choose not to insure against that risk. And that's that. And now this isn't one's right, wrong, one's good or bad. It's a choice that we make. You may choose to do what's called self-insure. You may choose to absorb the risk of a particular element, or you may choose to leverage that risk or to utilize an insurance company to help you cover off on what may be a financial gap or a financial need if certain life events would happen. And that's why it's very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. And it's also important to make the best choice with regards to the type of insurance that you have. You don't want to just randomly choose insurance just for the sake of choosing insurance. But there are different types of insurance. Certainly when we're talking about life insurance, where there are different types of insurance. There are different types of insurance which are appropriate for certain persons at certain times in their lives. Whether we're talking about perhaps term insurance for a family, or if we're talking about estate planning insurance, which is intended to cover off on estate taxes at passing. So very different reasons, very different needs that folks have at different points in their lives. So that's the what to know for today. That's the kind of thing that you want to keep in mind. You want to make sure that you're evaluating that for the right reasons. Well, friends, we're rapidly approaching the end of this week's version of Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. Let's do a rapid recap here on this end of things. We're going to start out with food first, Chipotle. I mean, good quarter. I think producer Bill and I helped them out a little bit there. But good quarter, good rebound from where they were. They had some suffering there. They've bounced back quite a bit. Big earnings season right now. Meta didn't do well. Google came out strong, just as of the time of this broadcast, came out very strong. It'd be very interesting to see the dichotomy there, if there's going to start to be a split among the leaders in the markets. And then also with regards to what we're looking at for the balance of the year market-wise, a lot ahead of us there, a lot we don't know. Stay tuned with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, and future shows here on WSIC.
Serving you better than ever before. WSIC, Statesville. W290DK, Mooresville. W264CU, Statesville.